Welcome to another episode of the Real World Assets Show. Join us on our journey to tokenize the world. Let's roll. Welcome again to another episode of the Real World Assets Show. Today we have a special guest. We have Thor Abbasi from Zyvo. And Zyvo is a, simply put, a RWA credit protocol focused on disrupting high interest consumer lending. And they're aiming to power a financially inclusive world. So we'll get more into it, but that's a lot to even unpack already. So welcome, Thor. How are you doing today?
Doing great. Thank you so much for having me on, Travis.
Same here. So Thor, I know you're a co-founder. You've been at this for a couple of years. You're also head operations. I got to meet John Kornstrom, your CTO and co-founder as well at Consensus just recently in Austin. So that was exciting. And I know we chatted about getting this set up. So excited to have you on. Just wanted to chat more. I guess, first off, just tell us a little bit about how you got this started and what was that origin story of Zyvo and what was the precipice of getting this started?
Yeah, for sure. So just to kind of recap it, as you mentioned, Zyvo is a real world asset credit protocol, and we're focused on disrupting high interest consumer lending. And the way we do that is by actually connecting on-chain liquidity with real world borrowers. You know, as we were kind of talking a little bit about before the show, Zyvo actually started as an idea a little over 2 years ago. I was actually talking with my father, of all people, who had left the previous business he was at and, you know, had exposure to the consumer lending market and had noticed a problem in this industry. And we kind of got talking about how we could address this particular market in a way, actually leveraging blockchain technology. So that is where Zyvo was actually born. And then from there, we actually brought on two additional co-founders, one of them being Crystal Grevsky, who is our general counsel, as well as one of our other co-founders. And her background is as a consumer regulatory compliance attorney in fintech, which has come in super, super handy, just given all of the, you know, changing regulatory winds in crypto. You'd also mentioned John Kornstrom, who is our CTO and one of our other co-founders. I had met him actually at a local blockchain meetup in Arizona, where we'd both been living. And John was fresh off actually some time at Maple Finance, which, for those of you who don't know, is kind of one of the original private credit protocols in the space. And I think they've done $2 or $3 billion in loan originations now. So they've been, you know, really successful. And John was responsible for architecting and helping lead the build out of their V1. So that is really how our core team came together. And since then, we've really been just been iterating on the project, spent, you know, a little over probably about a year and a half actually doing the tech development, including audits, and we're getting ready to launch coming up towards the end of the summer here. So it's an exciting time for us.
Yeah, that's exciting. I know I want to get into your partners, which, you know, definitely some who's who of partnerships there and audits you've already had, where you're at with fundraising and kind of your MVP. As you mentioned, I mean, having the right team is important. And as you mentioned, Maple Finance is obviously one of the pinnacle lending platforms out there. So clearly having a team that has that background is huge with John coming on board too. But as you noted, and it's not always as sexy of a topic, but anybody that's in the business as a builder appreciates having also a co-founder or a very, I found it to be very coincidental that co-founders are also in that compliance legal space. You know, instead of having even outside counsel, I'm seeing more and more blockchain projects because, as you mentioned, there's just so much regulatory murkiness out there. So having that is quite important, particularly when you're working very closely with finance, particularly in your case, consumer lending. So yeah, that's exciting to hear. I think that's, you know, that's always a big plus in my book, for sure.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that is really kind of unique about what we're doing is just the team we bring together. I think we have a really good background on our team between Tradify and DeFi, and just have a wealth of experience in the side of the team internally, not only on the tech side and the consumer regulatory compliance side, but also just in actually underwriting. And we can kind of get into why that's so important a little bit later, but I think it's something that we bring to the table that is super valuable, in that between a couple of people on our team is we probably have 40 plus years of experience in actually managing consumer loan portfolios and managing credit risk. And so that is really, really important part, I think, that we can dive into a little bit further on.
Yeah, I think that's a perfect transition. So let's talk a little bit about just this sector in general, like, you know, just why consumer lending. I mean, I think most people get this on the surface, but, you know, I know that predatory lending, personally, you know, just something I'm quite aware that is a problem, but just maybe paint a bigger, like a more specific picture, and we can talk about like the industry as a whole and what can be addressed here, particularly from Zyva's perspective.
Yeah, for sure. So I think when we talk about this, you know, I think people are always a little bit mind blown, because the thing that people don't realize is that in the US, there is $250 billion of unsecured consumer loans. And of that $250 billion, approximately $20 to $30 billion of that are loans that actually have triple digit APRs. And so what this actually looks like in reality, exactly, it's insane, is, you know, people who are borrowing like $2,000 to $10,000 at, let's say, a 200% or even higher APR. So you can go Google, you know, like high interest lending horror stories. And there's even a really good Bloomberg article called lending at, like, I think it's 576% during the pandemic is literally the name of the article. And it goes into a couple different kind of stories. One of them being a woman named Kimberly Richardson. And she borrowed $2,500 at a 276% APR. And she paid back over $7,000 in interest and fees over 2 years. And that doesn't include principal payments. And she ended up eventually defaulting on that loan. And so we, as a kind of a protocol, exist to help people like Kimberly. Our focus is on individuals who fall into this sector that, you know, are being mispriced, more or less. So someone like Kimberly, you know, we have, you know, we would view her as someone as a prime candidate for, you know, working with our lending partner, because she has made, you know, so many payments and she's paid back so much. Is, you know, there's a realization there that, hey, this person is trying to do the right thing and pay off her loan. So without going into the secret sauce of kind of how our underwriting works, we're really focused on helping people like her in this industry.
Yeah, no, I love that. Yeah, I know that you have a proprietary setup, but with regard to, like, maybe walk me through, as if I was Kimberly, you know, what it looks like, how you're identifying people, like, you know, because obviously I always like to visualize the on-ramp, and I think our listeners and viewers like to understand, like, how do people come into your world? What does that kind of front-end funnel look like? And as, obviously also, like, that's important, because if you're going to make an investment, we'll get into your token and the economy that you've created, and also the yield, which is all really exciting. But I think obviously everyone's going to look at that risk curve and say, like, would I want to get involved in Zyva based on your underwriting process? Like, why would I want to make this investment? So I think that's always an important start.
Yeah, for sure. And totally get that. I think one of the things to touch on before jumping into just kind of an overall explanation of the funnel, one of the things that, you know, we really take into account when building this out or going through this process is the user experience. Because at the end of the day, you know, something we really believe as a team is consumers don't necessarily care that they are interacting with a blockchain-based app. What they care about is that the thing that they're using works and is more effective than the incumbent. And so to that end, in order to be able to effectuate change in this particular market, is we are actually working with a lending partner to begin with. And we actually started out as one company with them and split into two to be regulatory compliant. Zyva is the crypto native credit protocol, and then there is a separate company called Zinclusive that has some shared management team members that is actually the traditional fintech responsible for originating loans to consumers. And what this allows us to do is Zinclusive can offer consumers an experience like they would get at any other lender. So, you know, like going back to your example, let's say you're Kimberly, right? And let's say, you know, you hear about us either through an advertisement on, let's say, Google or Facebook or a different kind of online channel, or even actually through direct mail, because a huge part in this industry still is actually sending people like flyers in the mail. So you kind of come in through one of these lead channels, you go to Zinclusive, and you apply to actually have your loan refinanced. So Zinclusive will then actually underwrite you and go, hey, you know, you are approved or not approved. What is actually happening on the back end of this is Zivo is providing the capital to actually fund these consumer loans that are being originated. Capital from Zivo is coming off chain, is actually funding these consumer loans that are being originated. And those loans are then being placed into an SPV or special purpose vehicle that the protocol actually has rights to protect it. And so that is just the super high level user flow. And then there's a whole bunch of different probably areas from here we could jump in and talk about a little bit more.
Yeah, no, that's exciting. And I mean, as you know, being compliant here in the US is very important and also requires extra steps. And I mean, all of the big players are doing the same thing. And I know obviously one of your partners is Securitize, which we could talk about, but clearly, like they're doing something very similar with BlackRock, which, you know, not too many conversations come up here without talking about just some of that, you know, some of the tailwinds that come from BlackRock and what's happened. But yeah, I mean, it's completely natural to have a Web2 business, and you're saying all the right things. I mean, ultimately, the blockchain should be invisible. Like any of the back end crypto native stuff or blockchain native things, generally speaking, are unnecessary and just confuse the process. So that's great that you have a very Web2 traditional way to help people, because they don't care. You know, they want to obviously find better terms and be able to you know, move forward with their life and move forward without having that over their head. You know, and high interest rate, of course, is still a loan, but something that's more manageable, not predatory.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I think being able to even step people down from something, you know, like 276% to even something like 60%, which is still high, is huge, because that's the difference between, you know, maybe you're making a monthly payment that's in just rough numbers, but, you know, something maybe like a $400 a month payment down to something like $100 a month payment. And that extra $300 is huge. And so that is, you know, really what we're trying to do to actually drive change in this industry. And it really does have real world impacts. And one of the things, you know, as you mentioned, is that the kind of back end for consumers in a way should be obfuscated out from a blockchain perspective. But what we're, you know, really looking to do in the long run too is actually look at, you know, how do we onboard these individuals into a Web3 world as some of the technology continues to get better and you have things like account abstraction become more and more common and more integrated into, let's say, traditional user-facing applications.
Yeah, totally agree. I mean, it's an education process, and yeah, ignoring the future being on blockchain, of course, is not the path either. But it's, you know, obviously we all hear about the association between the internet. Like, most people don't talk about, you know, going on the internet. They just talk about going to a site, you know, like yeah, or getting on an app. They don't say, I'm going to get on iOS or I'm going to get on, you know, they don't talk about the platform that's supporting it necessarily. They just talk about where they're going. So, but again, as you mentioned, building that bridge, making it natural, because people will obviously be doing quite a bit on the blockchain in the future. And, you know, having that education process naturally fits in your ethos, it sounds like, because you're very much educating people and you're providing a you know, essentially a life raft to people that need it most, you know, so they really appreciate and probably are one of the most open-minded to hearing after you've helped them ways to kind of move, you know, through that, like you said, whether it's some account abstraction, some way to make Web3, you know, pretty smooth for them.
For sure.
Yeah. So I think, I mean, you can help me transition if you want as well, but I think maybe we talk a little bit about, we talked a little bit about kind of that onboarding process. Actually, it has a lot of real world impacts and really you know, it's a for good type of public good type of service that you're obviously doing. I mean, clearly there are different, you know, kind of the buy side, sell side, and the customer side, which there's an entire economy that you're creating. So from the blockchain side and the Web3 side, what I, you know, really appreciated is obviously the yield. I do, I'm a big fan when it makes sense of having a tokenized ecosystem. And I know you have a token and you have really a well thought out process from the research I've done, but I'd love to talk more about just kind of how that other side of the coin works from the Web3 side. what this looks like for a lot of the listeners that listen to this show, of course. What does this look like from an investment standpoint? You know, how are you structuring this? And, you know, it sounds like you've done a lot of your homework on the front end, bringing people in, which is really important because you need customers and you need to solve a problem. And you guys have found a real serious problem. You've identified ways to solve it. Now, how do you get that investor side, you know, that's going to support this through the token, through getting yield, et cetera?
Yeah, for sure. Clearly, we, you know, you have to have capital to lend. And so that is definitely an important part of our model. From a, you know, on-chain user's perspective, or let's say you are a DeFi user in search of yield and you want exposure to real-world assets, you can come to the Zyvo application and you can actually deposit stablecoins into one of two tranches. So we have a fairly traditional structure for people that maybe have a little bit of a finance background. We have a senior tranche and we have a junior tranche. The junior tranche acts as first loss capital if the off-chain collateral held in the SPV is not enough to cover any losses, then that is actually taken out of the junior tranche. For that, they are compensated with a higher target yield, which we can kind of get into here in a second as well. The senior tranche has a lower target return, but it is protected by the junior tranche, which acts as that first loss capital. So once this capital actually comes into the protocol, for every stablecoin, a depositor receives a tranche token. Those tranche tokens can then be staked in our staking contract to actually claim the yield coming back on chain from this off-chain lending activity. What we're looking at to begin with as a target is a base target return of 10% to the senior tranche and 22% to the junior tranche, yield paid out in stablecoins. And on top of the base yield, people who are actually providing liquidity will also receive some ZVE, which is our native governance and utility token. So this token is used for participating in protocol governance. And then it also has utility in that it actually is receiving 10% of all yield that is being generated by the protocol. And so that is something that a liquidity provider, on top of earning those base returns from staking their tranche tokens, will also be receiving.
Nice. Yeah, those are healthy proposed returns for junior and senior tranche. And I do like the way you said it, very, you know, like you said, very TradFi focused, and lets people kind of pick their risk tolerance and where they want to be there. And from a utility perspective, the ZVE token, other than the governance, like what other utilities do you suspect? What other kind of like demand generation do you feel like that token's going to have in the sense of a utility perspective?
Yeah, for sure. So to dive a little bit more into the tokenomics of ZVE, first and foremost, that token's going to have a fixed supply or a cap supply of 25 million. So we're going to cap the supply there. And then we'll kind of just maybe go through to begin with the scenarios in which ZVE is actually released or emitted. So clearly, you know, as the team, we will have ZVE that is vesting to us, as well as some people who backed the project early will also receive ZVE that will be vested out to them. To briefly touch on that, that's going to look like a four-year vesting schedule. So that'll be a one-year cliff followed by 3 years of vesting. Now, you know, as I mentioned, I do have an attorney as a co-founder. So, you know, the one thing I'll caveat, especially as we're talking about yield and investing schedules and stuff, is, you know, everything is subject to change up until the point of the protocol launching. But what I will say is, you know, when we go into that launch, we will be sure to have our docs updated with everything with all accurate information. So just be sure to refer back to the docs when we go into our launch for anything that may have changed. So that'll look like a four-year vesting schedule for those individuals. Now, the first opportunity for you know, DeFi users more generally to receive ZVE is going to be through our ITO or initial tranche offering. And this is a period of time in which people who provide liquidity will actually qualify for a ZVE airdrop. So we're going to airdrop 5% of the supply. to people who participate in this initial tranche offering. Going back to the legal side one more time, is that'll just be restricted to people who are either U.S. accredited investors or non-U.S. persons. On an ongoing basis, we'll also have the ability to continue to incentivize liquidity deposits with ZBE emissions. In terms of usages for the actual ZBE token, so one first and foremost is the governance aspect of this. So the way our protocol actually works is all of the capital that is coming into the protocol is actually aggregated or essentially escrowed in a central DAO contract. You can almost think of this as like the central treasury, and that is like our ZyboDAO.Sol contract. From this central contract, what's actually happening is governance has the ability to allocate capital to different lockers. And at the locker level is where we are actually originating loans, and that the governance token has the ability to vote on which lockers to allocate capital to and can actually withdraw capital from these lockers. And then at the locker level, we would have different multi-sigs that are actually responsible for underwriting or originating loans to our lending partner. So that is kind of the high level of what the actual governance token does. And then finally, in order to actually claim that 10% yield that's flowing to the token, it will also need to be staked as well in order to claim that yield.
Right. Okay. So you stake the ZVE to earn a share of the protocol revenue, and that's in the form of USDC, correct?
Correct. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All right, cool.
All protocol revenue will get paid out in USDC.
Okay.
To begin.
Makes sense. I mean, USDC is on, I don't know, 17 blockchain. it's everywhere, right now. So probably the most universal of all tokens currently from a stablecoin perspective. So makes sense. And I'll just point out, I mean, obviously you have a lot of these graphs on your site, which I'll share, and your explainer video, quite a few things that are I don't even see very often with RWA projects with very, Web2 explainer videos and things like that, that really kind of explain how the protocol works. I think that, I love how you guys did that. It's a cool setup.
Yeah, we're very focused on transparency because I think, one of the things that we really believe is that blockchains are a better way to aggregate capital and are more capital efficient for some of these activities, especially when you're talking about things like tokenization and providing tokenized exposure. One of the tricky parts clearly about RWAs being such a new space, I think, is that sometimes you have to layer things or structure things in a way that, maybe if you don't have a background in that particular industry, it can be a little confusing to understand what's going on the back end and how things are actually working, which, we feel if you're making a, decision on whether or not you want to provide liquidity or be involved in any way, you should have a full understanding of what's actually occurring on the back end with capital that's going into the protocol. And so we really want to be as transparent as possible about, what are the actions that are actually occurring that with that capital.
Yep. Yeah, I totally agree. And you hit the nail on the head. I mean, obviously, you, from an investor standpoint or capital positioning standpoint, they really would not understand. I mean, obviously, it's there's a need there. It's a public good, which just makes an extra bonus. But understanding who that customer is, what the need is, and realizing then like what the risk tolerance might be is a lot easier for someone to make a decision. So I think that's exciting. And I know from like a timing standpoint, still you've been building a lot of things kind of behind the scenes and dealing with a lot of the regulation and a lot of the Web2 business as well, I'm sure. But from a protocol standpoint, I know that you had a private fundraise and you've had some audits done, moving into some additional things, I think, with mainnet and airdrops and things like that. So maybe we can talk a little bit about kind of like the roadmap of what you have planned here in the next, what maybe just wrapped up, as well as maybe what you have planned here through the next couple quarters.
Yeah, for sure. Always happy to touch on that. And for us, as I mentioned earlier, it's a really exciting time. We are getting ready to launch here this summer with a target launch date right now of July 31st is when we're actually planning on launching and holding the ITO or initial tranche offering. It's definitely been a long road getting to this point. But, you know, I'm happy to say that we've finished our build out, our, you know, tech build out's completely done. That's finalized, and we've undergone two audits. So we underwent an audit, one with runtime verification, hard to believe it, but that was back in 2023 now. And we just actually completed an audit with Sherlock, the auditing competition platform. So have undergone both of those audits. Those went really, really well for us. You know, they with any audit, you know, there's always going to be stuff found. But there wasn't anything that was, you know, crazy, crazy major. And we've addressed kind of all the issues that were noted. So we have kind of taken care of all that and are going to be going into our launch end of July. So definitely stay tuned for that. So just maybe give an understanding of like, okay, what's happening after this protocol actually launches. So we're going to have this ITO period, and this is likely going to run for 14 days. So that'll last until approximately August 14th. From the completion of the ITO, once governance votes to actually allocate capital to a lending locker, we would originate our initial loan to Zinclusive, our lending partner, who would then actually take that capital off chain. And what we are looking to do once Zinclusive has proven its underwriting models is very quickly begin to scale and grow our loan book past $25 million and actually prove just the concept out. Because I think what we are doing in a way is very much, you know, traditional, but also at the same time is really novel. And so one of the things we want to do before we continue to scale is just prove the concept and show everything working. And I think that's going to be super, super important.
I totally agree. Yeah, I mean, setting a benchmark of improving the concept of having that MVP and then having a dollar amount like the $25 million of saying, hey, this is where, you know, we feel is a good indicator of proving this out, you know, and also gauging demand and engaging, you know, I guess, kind of both sides of the funnel, you know, supply demand. So yeah, I love to hear that. And timing is exceptional. And I think also looking at people in the market from the capital perspective, that's going to be a big factor too. Like, what's the appetite for this from an investor standpoint? I mean, I think from a, as you mentioned, from a accredited investor standpoint, I would imagine this is probably somewhat attractive. And again, it's new. So there's always that little bit of education process of this is the same, but it's a little different. And I'm sure, you know, I'm simplifying that statement, of course, but I'm sure you can appreciate that. But it's always, there's always a little bit of that extra conversation. And the reason I say is because I also see that from accredited investors that when you say the word tokenization, you know, as much as I love the word tokenization, you probably love it. They're really just looking at like black and white, like, okay, what's the returns? What is like, what's the risk profile? Like, you know, how long am I locked up this long, et cetera? You know, they're just looking at very simple metrics that they've probably looked at for 20 or 30 years. And they're, you know, they're making those decisions on that. Like the tokenization side or the DeFi side, it's not that they're not interested, but it's like the icing on top of the cake, so to speak. So I think that's changing, as we know, like people are, their appetites and people's interest in this sector is becoming, you know, slowly happening. And then, you know, like, as they say, like slowly then all at once type of thing. I mean, we may experience that. We're experiencing some of that momentum now, but clearly there is a graduation process. So I like how you're kind of throttling that aspect of doing that and seeing where the demand is. And, you know, from there, obviously being able to kind of move, you know, into a scaling position is exciting.
Yeah, for sure. I think the, you know, the whole thing right now in terms of, you know, yield is, you know, I think we are very competitive amongst RWA protocols with the yields we are going to be offering out of the gate. And I think the thing that, you know, we really believe too is in the long run, you know, the yields as a protocol we are offering are going to be very attractive. I think we're in a position with the market right now where being that it's a bull market, and being kind of the stage of the market cycle we're at right now is, you know, you have a, you know, really good yield environment, which is great for all of us. It's, you know, as a person who, you know, is a DeFi user myself, I love times like this. It's fantastic. But we are really building as a long-term protocol and, you know, are thinking about, you know, 5 years from now, what does this environment look like? And as you continue to have broader adoption and the space continues to mature, you're going to see yield compression. And for us, it's, you know, we want to be competitive now, clearly, with, you know, the yields we are offering, but also it's what does it look like, you know, a year or 2 years from now? And I think, you know, when people are thinking about, you know, protocols in the space too, that's something they should think about or consider, not just with, you know, our project, but just protocols more generally. You know, what is that, you know, timeline actually look like? And is this something that is sustainable? Or is this something that is going to be, you know, only here for the next 2 or 3 months? And, you know, neither of those necessarily are bad or good, but, you know, just understanding those things, I think, is really important.
Yeah, you make a great point. And like you said, the yield environment right now is quite attractive. And as the numbers that you suggested, again, I know that that's not financial advice or guaranteed legal advice, as you mentioned, but realistically, it's great yield. And as you mentioned, there will be yield compression eventually. I mean, there's the markets always ebb and flow. And we are obviously in a very attractive yield environment currently. And I think that emphasizes where I like to, you know, or close out like a lot of this conversation, is that yield is one of the biggest things with RWAs. And I'd say, like, and I know I don't have to tell you that, but I think that's clearly why I think you're going to see continued demand from that aspect. And I have to ask, of course, I know that it's murky, but are you going to work on non-accredited investors being able, I know the answer is probably yes, but like, what are your thoughts about US non-accredited investors being able to participate in this at some point? Do you think that's realistic?
You know, at least for the foreseeable future, I think the answer is likely no. I am not an attorney, and so I can't speak to it. You know, this is an area, as I mentioned before, as we do have in-house general counsel, and she's one of my other co-founders, and Crystal's fantastic and would be the person to probably ask for an opinion on that. But all I'll say is, you know, we are really strong on regulatory compliance, because, you know, one of the things I think for us is that as you continue to see the merging of, you know, TradFi or DeFi, the lines between these two things become really, really blurry. The people who, in our opinion, are going to be successful in the long term are those people who are going to be compliant. And so that's really what we're focused on doing, is being compliant with all applicable laws and regulations, because, you know, for our roadmap and where we want to go, is we believe that's going to position us to be successful. So, you know, one of the things we haven't really touched on a ton that I can maybe briefly talk on is, you know, for us initially, what we're doing is we are working with a lending partner to originate these loans. And we're doing that to be compliant, and also because the technology is probably not quite where we'd want it to be in order to, let's say, actually originate loans directly to consumers. What we've always wanted to do as a protocol, though, and where we are going to work to get over time, though, is actually being able to originate loans directly to consumers from Zyvo, and actually do it in a manner where we're bridging between DeFi and TradFi, because we believe that is going to allow us to have the most efficient model possible and, you know, benefit the consumer as much as possible. And so long term, that's where we want to go. And clearly, to do that, you know, you got to be compliant.
100%. Yeah. And I know you touched on that earlier, like using a third-party lending partner is a great way to enter the space. And, you know, again, learnings and being able to kind of have that MVP. And from there, of course, you can expand, obviously, between blockchain, AI, and so many other things. Now, I'm sure that Zyvo will be able to, like you said, kind of build your own lending protocol that maybe is Web3 native, that, you know, may still have a Web2 kind of front end, clearly, and onboards people in a smooth way, but it has a full blockchain backend, which is great.
Yeah, that's what we're going to add over time.
Nice. So anything else that you want to add? It's been a great conversation, Thor, for sure.
No, I think this has been a fantastic conversation. Travis, thank you so much for having us on, and would highly recommend that anyone who hasn't, definitely go check out the RWA Builders site. And I would just kind of leave it on this, you know, for those who maybe were joining late or only caught the back half of the podcast, you know, my name is Thor. I'm one of the co-founders of Zyvo, and we are a real world asset credit protocol focused on disrupting high interest consumer lending. If you think this market shouldn't exist like we do, I invite you to join us and participate in our launch, which is going to be happening at the end of July. So Travis, thank you again for having me on.
It's been a pleasure. We'll talk soon and look forward to following everything as we approach your launch date.
Much appreciated.
Cheers.
Cheers.
And that's a wrap for this episode of the Real World Assets Show. Thanks for joining us on our journey to transform the future of finance, one asset and token at a time. For more insights, visit us on the web at rwa.builders. I'm Travis John, and I'll see you on the next episode.